offering our humble pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. After a couple of weeks, we are back again with the beautiful story of the Ramayana, as written by our dear Lord. The Ramakatha Rasvayani is the series we're going to continue now. As always, we begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet and at the feet of Lord Hanuman, who is believed to be present wherever the name of Rama is taken. We begin by ruminating over the beautiful and nectarous name of Lord Sri Rama.
Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajamaprame Sitapatim Raghukulanmaya Ratnadipam Ajanubahum
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to afternoon satsang today, where we shall travel back in time thousands of years to that point in the Treta Yuga where Lord Sri Rama with his brother Lakshmana and mother Sita are residing at Panchavati in the Dandakaranya forests. This is where we had reached in the previous fortnight, and the story from here on is as interesting as the story so far. The Ramayana might have happened thousands of years ago, but the beauty of this epic, the beauty of this story, the beauty of this legend, the beauty of this history of God is that the lessons, the ideals and the insights that it provides hold good for all times, for the present times and the future times to come. Little wonder that it is said, Yavat sthasyanti girayah saritascha maitale tavat ramayani katha lokeshu pracharishyati, which means that as long as the mountains and the rivers exist, the story of Ramayana will exist. Bhagwan in a discourse on the Ramayana had very lovingly said, or rather given an interpretation to this. He said that mountains stand for men and rivers stand for women. In Sanskrit, actually the mountains are addressed in the masculine gender and the rivers in the feminine gender also. And so he said the inner significance of that poem is that as long as there are people, so long will the story of Ramayana exist. That, I think, sums up the relevance of Ramayana to the past, to the present, and to the future. And it is indeed our privilege that the avatar of the age, the compassionate Bhagwan Sri Sakti Sai Baba, our dear Swami, has given us this nectar story in his own perspective, which is the first person account. Because when Swami writes about Rama, it is an autobiographical account. So let us remember this privilege that we have, the pleasure that we have, and then proceed along with the story when the trio of Rama, Lakshmana and Sita are residing at Panchavati.
Talking of the Ramayana, I think we have made this mention many times. As you said, it is not a story which is just filled with drama and adventure. It's a story which we all can learn from. And if you look at the approach towards a guru itself as given by Swami, I think something can be drawn out of it in the way we approach epics such as the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. You know, many times Swami would say that when you go to God, when you go to Guru, what comes first is faith. You know, very often we have heard this from Swami. It's not experience that precedes faith, but it's faith that precedes experience. So in a sense, when you accept a person as divine, as a person who is going to give you the right guidance, you try to put in perspective the guidance which comes. Like when the master gives you a certain direction, you know that this direction is definitely for my good, and you try to figure out in what way is it good for me. If you apply the same approach to the epics such as the Ramayana, many, many times Swami has said, you know, that Ramayana has the secrets of the lessons of all the Vedas. You know, it is the essence of the Vedic knowledge. Which means that here in the Ramayana, we know that there is a treasure trove of lessons we can learn. So many times when you look at the story, you might feel that why did it happen this way? Why did it happen that way? You know, why couldn't have it been plotted differently? But when you approach it with that Shraddha, with that faith and with that strong belief that this is a perfect story which can give that perfect lesson, you try to look at the lessons which come from it and see more deeply into it. I think, and that is where we actually benefit from the Ramayana, and that is exactly where the Ramakatha Rasayani, when studied or when looked at in a very, very deep perspective, you can see that the way Swami is laid out. I think we made this mention much before also. We are into almost the first quarter of the second book. And still the real climax, I mean the second half has really not started. And it only goes to show that how much Swami gave importance to that relationship within that family, which was almost an ideal family. The household of Dashratha, isn't it?
Exactly. If you actually look at even the Valmiki Ramayana, from the number of verses, it appears as if even in the Valmiki Ramayana, the part where we are, that is before the kidnapping of Mother Sita, that part is actually emphasized a lot. The killing of the demons and all that is not emphasized so much even in the Valmiki Ramayana. It so happens that when a devotee, we had mentioned this earlier, that the Valmiki Ramayana is the way a man sees a man. A man sees a perfect man. Valmiki, the way he saw Rama. And we say that Tulsi, Kamban, Ramayanam are the way a devotee looks at the Lord. So when a devotee looks at the Lord, those feelings of love and affection towards the Lord often makes the devotee go into raptures and into poetry. And that is why when a devotee writes about the Lord, we see an elaborate description and a lot of details about how the Lord vanquished, because the devotee revels in the glories of the Lord. Again, when the Lord describes the stories of the Lord, that is what is Ramakatha Rasavahini, Swami writing about Rama, it is back to what God would like man to follow. And we rarely see even Swami speaking highly of himself. It is those few discourses which we treasure, where Swami reveals who he is, what he is, and we treasure that. We treasure it because in every other discourse, Swami never shows or says who he is. So therefore, when Swami has given so much of importance to the initial part, it definitely shows that those are the areas where we have to concentrate. The other thing is, even the remaining parts, when Swami explains, the way Swami explains, if you see, he doesn't do it in the standard way as it's present in Valmiki Ramayana or in the Tulsi Ramayana. He does it in his own unique manner, and we will start seeing more of such unique interpretations from this point on. We saw one in the way Swami salvages Kaikeyi. In fact, Swami salvaging Kaikeyi is not part of the Ramakatha Rasavahini. it was borrowed from Swami's discourses delivered later on. But from now on, there are points which are present in the Ramkatha Rasavahini itself, which show a twist in the tale. And to begin that, we start at that point in time when Sita and Lakshmana are having a time of their life, staying in the nearness and dearness of the supreme avatar, Lord Shri Ram. And Rama is spending the whole day in discoursing Sita and Lakshmana, in interacting with them, spending time with them. It's beautiful. If you just picture yourself, just one of you, one or two of you, two of us with Swami, just imagine both of us sitting with Swami day in and day out in a location where nobody is there. Swami is all for us. What beautiful times it'll be. Those were the beautiful times that Lakshmana and Sita were enjoying. And they were in supreme bliss, naturally. And Lakshmana continued to do his duty of being a guard. You know, when you say being a guard, taking care of Rama and Sita, it almost makes one smile. I'm reminded of how for a few years some of us got the opportunity of guarding Swami's residence, Trai Brindavan, at night, where we would get the opportunity to sleep close to the residence. And the reason given was we would take turns to keep awake to ensure that, you know, I don't know what to ensure what, but it was in the name of security that we were doing this. But all of us were totally convinced that in the name of security, we are getting this opportunity to be near to our Lord. Of course, Swami says that dearness matters more than nearness. But we can't deny the fact that somehow nearness can also lead to dearness, can lead to us relishing and experiencing the Lord in His full glory and therefore developing a dearness to Him. And in the same manner, if we extrapolate, we realize that though Lakshmana was there on duty, in fact, he had given up his sleep. We narrated how for 14 years he told Nidra Devi, the goddess of sleep, that don't come near me, don't embrace me, I can't afford to sleep. And he was doing his duty. The reality, as we read the Ramkatha Rasavahini, we realize that it was a great opportunity and a blessing showered on Lakshmana to enjoy the physical proximity of the avatar of that age.
Very true. And the other thing which we actually spoke about the last time when we were doing the Ramkatha Afternoon Satsang was the dialogue which happens between Lakshmana and Rama, where Rama kind of explains some of the very subtle truths using Lakshmana as an alibi. Now, through Lakshmana, he gives to the world some of the wisdom. I think this again is a pattern which you will see in many occasions in the life of an avatar. For instance, what happens even with Krishna and Arjuna. You know, here was somebody who was, as Swami would very beautifully say, here is Narottama. Arjuna was supposed to be a Narottama, one who's best among the men. And Krishna was Purushottama, you know, one who is the ultimate among all living beings. And when these two come together, what you get is Gita. So Swami would very often say that here I am the giver. Swami would many times, you know, say that even in the discourse, I am ever ready. But when you come with that preparedness of a sadhaka, which is required when you come to me, you can draw from me what is required. Just like how the mother cow gives out the milk. And that's precisely what Lakshmana was doing, you know, more, and as beautifully as you said, it was not that he was contributing something, but that preparedness which he had through this seva, through this ability to give up sleep, made him ready to receive that wisdom from Rama and pass it on to the world. Of course, the later part of it is how this was itself a part of the play in dealing with the rest of the Rakshasas whom Rama comes to do. Well, that's later part of the story, but the beginning of that end, you know, begins here, in a sense.
When you say that, you know, Lakshmana was chosen in that sense because he was having the readiness, and all what Rama conferred onto Lakshmana, we are enjoying it today. This is a common thing, as you said, in all avatars, even, you know, in the Swami's avatar. Why is it that we want to listen to other people's experiences? Because though an experience is very personal, though the experience is always one-to-one, as Swami says, there are absolutely no intermediaries between the devotee and the Lord. In fact, if anyone tries to be an intermediary, pluck them and chuck them out, because they are not meant to be. So though the experiences are direct one-to-one, we still clamor after listening to others' experiences, because though they were between that Lord and that devotee, listening to that experience itself, we derive inspiration, we derive insights. So in that sense, it is almost like all the food that is fed to the body is fed to the mouth. But though the mouth is fed, the whole body gets nourished. And therefore, though each devotee has an experience with the Lord, each of those experiences help in nourishing humanity as a whole.
And the other point of it, if you just to make a mention, is generally when you go into neuroscience, they see why it is bad for children to see violent movies or play violent games. You know, when they study that, they find that there is an inherent quality in the human beings which is more pronounced than in the other living organisms, which is what we call empathy. But neurologically, there are many ways of looking at it. They say mirror neurons, where you're able to an extent, simulate what is happening with what you're seeing. Like, suppose I'm seeing a movie. The reason why we invariably get into one of the characters and we live that movie for those 3 hours, 2 hours, 1.5 hours, whatever is the duration, is because without our knowledge, you get into the character and you simulate whatever is happening in that person, to that person, to your own self, in your mind. And that is why when Swami says satsangam, and when you go to a parayanam, you listen to the Ramayana, you listen to the Mahabharata, without your knowledge, you are getting into one of those characters and you are experiencing the joy. You know, it might be, as we said, synthesized happiness. We spoke so much about it the past couple of weeks. But really, it does work, because so much of what we go through in life actually happens only in our head. You know, the pain most of the time is only in our head. The fear is most of the time in our head. The insecurity, it might not be really around us. That is why so much of simulation happens in the head. And dear listeners, that is why it is so very beautiful to listen to the Ramayana and such epics again and again. And it is our joy to go on speaking about it over and over again.
And so Lakshmana is now one day standing outside the hermitage, doing his duty as a guard, and he's keeping watch. And as he's walking, he suddenly espies a little lime sapling. He sees that the sapling is growing under the shade of a giant tree, and it's not receiving its share of sunlight. So his heart melts for this little plant. He decides that, let me transplant this sapling into some other place which receives enough sufficient sunlight. So he's sitting and he's gently digging out this sapling. And as he's doing this, one figure is approaching the ashram, the hut where they are staying in Panchavati. And it is a lady, a Rakshasi. A Rakshasi meaning a demoness, by the name Shurpanakha. Now, you know, when the Shurpanakha comes close, and the moment she sees Lakshmana, it is love at first sight. Actually, you know, it is more like lust at first sight. Because what they say is, love at first sight, even scientifically, has been explained as nothing but a kicking in of hormones and some neurological sensations. So, love at first sight is not actually the fact, the truth, because love is something much deeper. Love comes with understanding. Love comes with absolute, complete understanding and becoming like two bodies and a single soul. A single soul in two bodies. But what happens instantaneously is what is lust. So most of the love at first sight is nothing but lust at first sight. And that is what happens to Shurpanakha. And in that single instant, she decides that whoever this being might be, I want to marry him. And with that objective, she approaches Lakshmana. Before we go ahead with the story, a mention should be made here that when the term Rakshasa or Rakshasi is used, we often picture a very ugly looking person, a huge, with all body parts that are not proportional, and basically a mass of ugliness. This is what we picture. But as we have seen, all these epics, most of the descriptions are metaphorical. It is said that a person's beauty is what lies within, not prettiness. Because prettiness will wither away. Beauty is defined as something that is permanent, that is forever, that is ageless. And therefore, we can't equate beauty with prettiness. If we see the story of Kubja in the Bhagavatam,
right.
Lord Krishna says to Kubja that she is a beautiful woman, and she feels that Lord Krishna is mocking her because she is a hunchback, her body is bent, and she is very old. That is when Krishna says that this is a wrong concept of beauty. Beauty is something within. The same thing is highlighted even by Ashtavakra. Ashtavakra, the name itself means bent at eight points. His body was bent in 8 points, and he was a scholar par excellence. When he entered the king's court and everyone laughed at him, he told the king that, "I thought I have come to a congregation of scholars, but I see that you have a congregation of cobblers, because they are judging based on my skin. It's only a cobbler who judges based on skin, that is leather." So beauty is something within. And by portraying Rakshasas and Rakshasis as ugly, it doesn't mean that these people were ugly physically. It just is a reflection of their character, and therefore metaphorically they are presented. For example, Valmiki describes Shurpanakha as pot-bellied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if we see later on, even Swami describes, when we will be listening to that discourse clip there, when Swami says that what happened to Shurpanakha destroyed her beauty and disfigured her.
Mm-hmm.
You can't disfigure an ugly object. You can't destroy the beauty of an ugly object, which means Shurpanakha was beautiful in the physical sense. But when they are described as demons, demonesses, it is to show their, it's a reflection of their inner being. So therefore a person might be pretty and handsome, pretty or handsome, but might be ugly because of what is within. So when Valmiki describes Shurpanakha as pot-bellied, a big stomach, it is supposed to indicate unsatiable desires. So many desires that they are never fulfilled. We had also discussed this in one satsang about pretas.
Right.
How you can never get satiated. So that is the significance of pot belly. And Valmiki describes her as having oversized breasts. That is supposed to indicate a heart that is swelling with wickedness and lust. Again, she is said to have a grating voice, an irritating sound, which means she is very harsh and cruel on anybody who sees her and listens to her. So, just want to make a point here that though Rakshasa and Rakshasi are described in very ugly manner, that ugliness is not their physical beauty, but a reflection of the inner being.
Absolutely. I think because why this point is important to be made is because when she approaches Lakshmana, eventually she changes her form to appear beautiful. So which means it wasn't the ability to look the way they chose to look. So there isn't much in the appearance really, because as they all seem to have mastered the art of appearing, you know, in a way which is more pleasant and more acceptable to the others. But it is the ugliness inside. I'm reminded of an incident which happened, I think, many years ago. Swami had called for an interview. A batch of students from one of the colleges run by Swami's devotees. It was actually a college run according to Swami's value education. So Swami had called this group of girls for an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were very new. For the first time they were coming for Swami's darshan, and they landed up in the interview room. So after the initial few, you know, exchanges, Swami looked at them and said, "Anybody has any questions, you can ask me." And it seems one of those young girls there asked Swami, what should I do to get a husband like Rama?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was a question she asked, and needless to say, the others were a little embarrassed because that's not the question you ask in an interview, that too, first time you're walking into the interview room. But this girl was, you know, had the boldness which comes out of innocence. So she asked this question, and Swami very, very beautifully gave her a wonderful answer. He said, "If you have a character like Sita, you'll get a husband like Rama." And he said, "If you have a character like Shurpanakha, then you'll get a husband like Ravana."
Ravana was her brother.
But Swami was telling that, you know, the beauty and the cruelness in the character, that is what draws to you what comes to you in life. And, I mean, maybe just a side point, that girl was really having some issues at home where, you know, she was a little, something like a problem child at home. And that one comment of Swami changed her whole approach. She realized that, you know, how it is that you draw goodness to you through your inner goodness and not through your beauty. And that's really what Swami, you know, is kind of hinting at here when the description of Rakshasas and Rakshasis are given. Because much in other places, if you see the description of Ravana, which is given, is really something which anybody would look at and have a lot of awe for, and, you know, say that, wow, that's
like a mighty bodybuilder.
Yes. It's, you know, he's supposed to be tall. He's supposed to be much taller than Rama himself. And of course, even in the side of talent and art, he's supposed to be a master of all that. But character is something much, much more subtler than all this, all that which can be seen and can be observed from outside. And that's what is the essence of the description of Surpanaka as given by Valmiki also.
You know, looking in the same angle, when you say that Surpanaka transformed herself from a Rakshasi to a beautiful damsel as she approached Lakshmana, again, if we see it in this angle as we discussed, we realize that it is not about changing your physical form. It is about changing your nature. When we become hypocrites, we are all being like Surpanaki. You know, we have irritation in the heart, we have wickedness, we have cruel intentions, but we mask it. In Hindi, there is a saying that goes as, Muh mein Ram Ram, haath mein chura. Which means in your mouth you take the Lord's name, but in your hand you have a dagger which you are ready to stab. In Sanskrit, there is a quote which says that you are feeding someone honey, picking up the honey from the tip of your sword. While that honey may please the tongue, anytime it may cut the tongue which it's feeding. So, the description of Surpanaka transforming herself into a beautiful damsel is symbolic of hypocrisy that we do. When we try to camouflage and mask all the ugliness and market ourselves as noble by appearing beautiful, by appearing pretty. That is why beauty is not skin deep, it goes beyond. Beauty is not just how we appear. And so Surpanaka approaches Rama and Lakshmana, and she says, "Who are you, sir? You know, my heart has been captivated by you. You have captured my heart in an instant. Would you consent to making me yours? I would like to be owned by you. I want to become yours." And Lakshmana just smiles. He doesn't even look up at her. He tells Surpanaka that, "You see, my lady, I'm actually a slave. I'm a slave to the master who lives there. And if you marry a slave, you too shall become a slave. I don't think a person like you should become a slave. So why do you want to ask me? Why don't you approach the master and ask the master himself?" And this is what Lakshmana says and stalls her. And it is exactly at this point in time, hearing this conversation, Rama and Sita just walk out of the hut. And Surpanaka, Swami says that the moment she looks at Rama, you know, this actually shows that it was not love at first sight, you know, because she totally forgets Lakshmana. She stands bewitched. She is mesmerized at the masculinity, at the handsome face, at the impressive figure of Lord Sri Rama. She just forgets totally about Lakshmana, and in fact, maybe she feels even grateful that he didn't accept my proposal, because why should I go for second best when the best stands in front of me? That is how it happens, and she decides to go towards Rama.
And another point which Swami makes here is that when she looks at Rama and when she looks at Lakshmana and gets attracted, Swami says that, you know, who will not be attracted, because this is the glow which comes out of dharmic life. You know, Swami says that Lakshmana has lived such a pure life that glow is shown on his face. And Rama, of course, is the purest one. But it is that purity that she is getting attracted to. This again is a very beautiful point. But because her nature is very physical, her nature is very, very superficial, she is not able to really see what is the thing which is attracting her. And we will come to know that, you know, attraction to whatever it is, you're getting attracted to God. You know, you might get attracted to God for the wrong reasons, for the wrong things you're seeing. Like we've seen so many people coming to Swami, being attracted by what Swami was able to do or what Swami was able to achieve. But even that attraction could be beneficial for you. But here, you know, here is Surpanaka, she is looking at Lakshmana and she says that, "I've never seen somebody being so, somebody as handsome as this." She looks at Rama and says, "I've never seen any form of beauty like this. You know, this is the best form of masculine beauty I've ever seen." But she doesn't know the source of that beauty, the source of that glow. So she is getting attracted to the external beauty, but not the source of that beauty.
That's a very valid and powerful point that Swami makes. And very nicely you have picked and highlighted that, Prem. Because, you know, if we look at the Bollywood movies, our exposure is a little more to the Bollywood movies. And therefore, I'm quoting the movies made in India. There are some of these movies where violence against women happens,
mm-hmm.
where a woman gets assaulted. Now, if we look at most of the movies, I'm not saying all, but most of these movies, our blood boils in righteous anger because the woman being assaulted is actually a very noble woman, a very good woman. And in that same movie, of course, everything is just acting, but in that same movie, there are other women characters, women roles, which are not as good as this lady who has suffered, who are possibly of a lower character. Nothing seems to happen to them. But the women who are the noblest, mostly the heroines of the movie, who are having noble virtues, they are the ones who get assaulted. So what I'm trying to say is, it struck me now that just like Shurpanakha got attracted, though she didn't realize that the source of that beauty is the virtue, even in movies when you look at that, you realize that possibly the movie director also never thought about that, but he somehow recognized this truth that the attraction happens towards people who are noble, who have got a righteous character. Because all these kind of wrong things, villains assaulting women, happen to women who are noble. So it is not their facial beauty, but it is a beauty of character that shines through. No wonder Swami says that end of education must be character, and beauty is not skin deep, beauty is something very deep within, and it doesn't age, it doesn't stale, it doesn't go away, because character is forever. And as you were highlighting what Swami has said in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, I just got thrilled thinking that even unconsciously, this is what is portrayed in the movies, that a person who is noble and full of character appears more beautiful in the eyes of the world.
Very true. I think, and that's clearly in every way, as you said, even the description of the Rakshasas. These are very, very subtle descriptions which are given in the epics. You know, suppose if Ramayana has to be redone now, I mean, when we see the serials of the Ramayana or serials of Mahabharata, I think they pick good-looking people even for the negative roles, right? You don't have ugly-looking people in the negative roles, because it's true. You're actually being taught to see deep within. It's not about the looks. It's not about the way you carry yourself. And that is why even in the making of these characters in these epics, it is given that glorious characters fall, like Ravana for that matter, or even Shurpanakha for that matter. They all said and none have certain abilities within themselves, but misusing that, and that is where the difference between the good and the bad come. Because the scene which we are going to witness now, if you put somebody else in the place of Rama and Lakshmana, I think the way they kind of made fun of Shurpanakha, if you were to put it as this was, let's say, you know, Maricha and Subahu were doing it, then,
Sita.
Right, this would have been a negative scene where there are two men who are mocking at a woman. But now you're seeing that it is Rama and Lakshmana who are having actually a little bit of fun at the cost of Shurpanakha. Because Shurpanakha, as you said, at the point she comes running to Rama now, because Lakshmana has said that he's my master, if he accepts you, I become your slave as I am a slave to my brother Rama.
Before we play the clip, maybe a brief history of Shurpanakha. It is described that Shurpanakha was born as Meenakshi.
Okay.
And in Sanskrit, Meenakshi means one with the eyes of a fish. And I don't know, it is supposed to be a description of beauty actually, or prettiness, eyes of a fish. So she was born very beautiful. She was very beautiful in the physical sense. And it is said that her own brother Ravana kills her own husband. Kills her husband. Some say that it was accidental. There are many, many versions. Some say it was purposeful. But whatever, and Shurpanakha is very, very angry on her brother. That is why she leaves the kingdom of Lanka, which is, according to the Ramayana, the present-day country of Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. She leaves that area and comes over to the Dandaka forest, which is the current-day Madhya Pradesh region in India, where all the other Rakshasas and Rakshasis are. And she decides to stay there. And Ravana feels very repentant for this, and he's trying to win his sister back. But in her heart, she has never forgiven her brother for killing her husband. So all said and done, she is not ready to forgive Ravana. As a kind of consolation, or in trying to patch up with his sister, it is said that Ravana gifts her the forests in this a part of the forest of the Dandaka forest,
okay.
Dandakaranya, a part of the forest, and says, this forest totally belongs to you. Any creature that lives there is yours. Any tree that is there is yours. And therefore, she assumes that Rama and Lakshmana too belong to me, and therefore it's my right to own them. This is the feeling that she has. And as we shall see the episode unfold, we will realize that when it comes to God, your wealth, your riches, your influence, your power, nothing can win God, because you can win God only through your love and heart, and it's a one-to-one relationship with God. And so therefore, you might be the most powerful person in the world, the most influential, the most wealthy, but there's no guarantee you will get God, because God sees wealth of another form, which is the wealth of the heart. So with this background, I think we can listen to Swami narrating this episode in this discourse clip. This discourse was delivered during the summer course in 1996. If I'm not mistaken, it is the 24th of May. 24th of May, 1996. So a clip from that discourse, dear listeners, we'll hear to that and then continue the discussion after that.
She went straight where Rama was.
అక్కడ రాములు కూడా ఇదే ప్రశ్న వేశాడు. ఎవరమ్మా మీరు?
Rama also has put the same question, who are you?
నేనెవరైతే నీకేమి, నీవెవరు మొదలు అని ప్రశ్నించింది ఈమె.
She said, why are you concerned about me? Let me know who you are.
నేను దశరథ మహారాజు యొక్క పుత్రుడును.
And the son of Emperor Dasharatha.
అని జరిగినటువంటి యొక్క చరిత్ర అంతా కూడాను చెప్తూ వచ్చాడు.
And he went on telling what all that had happened.
కాని ఈ చరిత్ర ఆమె కర్ణములలో ప్రవేశించలేదు.
She didn't pay heed to all these words.
కడపటికి ఈమె తనను తాను అడ్రస్ చేసుకుంది.
Finally she started addressing to her own
self. మహావీరుడైనటువంటి రావణుని యొక్క సోదరుడు.
I am the sister of Ravana, the great warrior.
కుంభకర్ణ విభీషణుని యొక్క సోదరుని.
I am the sister of Kumbhakarna and Vibhishana.
కరుడు దంతవక్రుని యొక్క సోదరుని.
And the sister of
Kara Dushanadi.
Kara Dushana.
ఈ విధంగా తనంతాను చెప్పుకుంటూ నా పేరు సూర్పణఖ అన్నాడు.
She started introducing herself and said, my name is Surpanaka.
అయితే మీరు ఎందుకు వచ్చారు ఇక్కడికి?
Then why have you come here?
ఈమెకి ఏ విధమైనటువంటి జంకు గుంకు లేదు.
She had no hesitation whatsoever.
డైరెక్ట్ గా రాములతో చెప్పింది, నిన్ను వివాహం ఆడటం కోసం వచ్చాను.
She told Dairaka, I have come here to marry you.
రాములకు అరణ్యములో ఈ విధమైన తమాషలు జరగటం ఇదే ప్రప్రథమం.
It is the first time such funny things happened in the history of Rama.
లక్ష్మణుడు కూడా దగ్గరకు వచ్చారు.
Lakshmana came close.
వీరిరువురు కూడా చిరునవ్వులు నవ్వుతున్నారు.
Both of them were smiling.
ఈమె అడిగినటువంటి యొక్క ప్రశ్నకు ఏ విధంగా జవాబు ఇవ్వాలి?
How to answer her question?
అప్పుడు రాములు యోచించి ఈమెతో కొంతసేపు తమాషాలు జరిపాలి అని సంకల్పించుకున్నాడు.
Rama thought over for some time and wanted to make fun of her.
అమ్మా సూర్పణక,
సరే సూర్పణక,
మీరు చాలా సౌందర్య రాశి.
యు ఆర్ బ్యూటిఫుల్.
నీ సౌందర్యములకు తగినటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తి ఇక్కడ మీకు చిక్కరు.
యు డోంట్ ఫైండ్ ఎన్ ఎగ్జాక్ట్ పర్సన్ దట్ సూట్స్
యు. ఒకవేళ చిక్కినను నేను నిన్ను వివాహం ఆడటానికి వీలు కాదు.
Even if there is one, well, I can't marry you anyway.
నీవు గొప్ప రాజు యొక్క సోదరివి.
You are the sister of a mighty king.
నిన్ను సవతిపోరులో పెట్టడం నాకు ఇష్టం లేదు.
I don't want to have any stepsisters.
నాకు ఒక భార్య ఉన్నది.
I have wife.
నీవు తిరిగి నీవు నన్ను పెళ్లాడితే నీకు సవతిపోరు వస్తుంది.
If you marry me, you will have all the conflict fighting there.
కనుక అదిగో లక్ష్మణుడు ఉన్నాడు.
There is a Lakshmana there.
అతని వెంట తన యొక్క ధర్మపత్ని రాలేదు.
His wife has not followed him.
అతన్ని వివాహం ఆడమని తమాష చేశాడు.
He started making fun of this way, why you marry him?
తిరిగి నిజమేనుకుని తలంచి ఈ సూర్పణక లక్ష్మణ దగ్గరికి వెళ్ళింది.
And listening to these words, Surpanaka approached
లక్ష్మణ, నీవు సిద్ధంగా ఉన్నావా నన్ను వివాహం ఆడటానికి?
లక్ష్మణ, are you ready to marry me?
సిద్ధమే, కానీ నిన్ను కొన్ని శ్రమంలో పెట్టడం నాకు ఇష్టం లేదు అన్నాడు.
He said, yes, I am ready, but I don't want you to suffer.
ఏమిటి ఆశ్రమ అనింది?
What is that?
నేను శ్రీరామచంద్రుని యొక్క దాసుడను.
I am the servant of Sri Rama.
నీవు నన్ను వివాహమాడితే నీవు కూడాను దాసురాలు కావచ్చు.
If you marry me, you will also be a servant.
నీవు గొప్ప కుటుంబంలో పుట్టినటువంటి దానవు.
You belong to a very big family.
కేవలము ఒక రావణాసుని యొక్క సోదరిని.
You are the sister of Ravanasura.
అలాంటి స్త్రీవి నీవు దాసురాలు కావటము సరి అయినటువంటిది కాదు.
సచ్ ఎ గ్రేట్ లేడీ, షీ కాంట్ బి మియర్లీ సర్వెంట్.
కనుక నీవు మాస్టర్ ని వివాహమాడు, శ్రీరాముల్ని వివాహమాడు అని చెప్పి.
బెటర్ యూ మ్యారీ ద మాస్టర్ హింసెల్ఫ్ శ్రీరామ.
ఈ విధంగా ఇరువురు కూడా తమాషాలు చేస్తూ వచ్చారు పాపం.
బోత్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ స్టార్టెడ్ మేకింగ్ ఫన్ ఆఫ్ హర్ లైక్ దిస్.
13 సంవత్సరములు జరిగినప్పటికీ ఆ అరణ్యములో ఇలాంటి జోక్ ఎప్పుడు కూడా సంభవించలేదు.
దో 13 ఇయర్స్ పాస్, సచ్ ఎ జోక్ నెవర్ టుక్ ప్లేస్.
ఈ రెండింటి యొక్క సంభాషణలు కూడా వింటూ ఉన్నది సీత.
Sita was listening to this conversation.
ఆమెకు ఇది ఒక పెద్ద ఆశ్చర్యంగా కనిపిస్తుంటుండాలి.
She was very much surprised.
ఏ స్త్రీలైనా కూడా ఈ విధంగా డైరెక్ట్ గా వచ్చి వివాహమాడమని కోరుతారా?
Will any woman ask like that directly, will you marry me?
ఆమె రూపము చూస్తేనే తెలుస్తున్నది పెద్ద రాక్షసి అని.
The very appearance is that of a demon.
తనలో తాను నోరు మూసుకుని కూర్చున్నది.
She just remained silent.
తిరిగి శూర్పణక రాముల దగ్గరకు వచ్చింది.
శూర్పణక came to Rama.
నీవు చెప్పావు,
యు సెడ్
సవతి పోరు నీకు ఇవ్వకూడదు అని.
యు సెడ్ దట్ యు దేర్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి ఎనీ ఇన్ ఫైటింగ్ బికాజ్.
రామా, నీవు అంగీకరిస్తావంటే లక్ష్మణ్ని సీతను ఒక్క నిమిషంలో నేను మరణింపచేసి మనం ఇరువురు కూడాను ఈ అరణ్యములో సుఖంగా జీవిస్తామని.
రామా, ఇఫ్ యు ఆర్ రెడీ, ఐ విల్ కిల్ లక్ష్మణ సీత ఇన్ ఎ మూమెంట్. వీ కెన్ హ్యావ్ ఎ హ్యాపీ టైమ్ ఇన్ ద ఫారెస్ట్.
ఈ సీత నీకు అడ్డముగా ఉంటుండాలి.
Sita is an obstacle here.
సీతను నేను మింగి వేస్తానని సీత పైన దుంకింది.
షీఈస్ రెడీ టు స్వాలో సీతా, షీ జంప్డ్.
అప్పుడు సీత కొంచెం వెనుకకు జరిగింది.
దెన్ సీత విత్డ్రూ.
రాముడు చెప్పాడు,
రామ సార్,
పురుష సింహము పక్కలో ఉండగా ఈ చిన్న మృగముల యొక్క దీనికి భయం నీకెందుకు?
వై ఆర్ యూ అఫ్రైడ్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ది స్మాల్ ఎనిమల్స్ వెన్ ద లయన్ ఈస్ బై యువర్ సైడ్?
సైగు చేశాడు రాముడు.
రామ సిగ్నల్.
రాముని యొక్క చిత్తము లక్ష్మణుడికి తప్ప మరొకరికి తెలియదు.
ది హార్ట్ ఆఫ్ రామ ఈజ్ నోన్ ఓన్లీ టు లక్ష్మణ్ అండ్ నో వన్ ఎల్స్.
పైకి చూచాడు.
హి లుక్డ్ అప్.
ఏమిటి ఇది?
వాట్ ఇస్ దిస్?
అనగా ఏమి? తాను పైన చూచేటప్పటికి శ్రవణము అనేటువంటి తెలిసింది, శబ్దము. ఆకాశం నుండి శబ్దమే ఉద్భవించినటువంటిది.
యాజ్ హి లుక్డ్ అప్ ఇట్ మీన్స్ ద సౌండ్ దట్ ఒరిజినేట్స్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్.
శ్రవణం అనగా ఏమిటి? శ్రవణమునకు కర్మేంద్రియములు చెవులు.
The ears have power of audition.
Cut chesadu Lakshmanudu.
Lakshmana has cut the ears.
Tadupari nasikam.
Next nose.
Mukkala chesadu.
Yes, cut the nose also.
Ee vidhanga surpana yokka andamunu chedaragottadu ee Lakshmanudu.
Well, Swami describes that episode, and even as Swami describes, we realize more and more that it was not love for Shurpanaka. It was as if she is choosing between two cars or two dishes in a hotel. She didn't mind shifting to Rama, shifting to Lakshmana. And I think it was in order to show her that what you have in your feeling is not true love. And it's only through love that you can win the Lord, not in any other manner, that they kept shuttling her between Rama and Lakshmana. And she was ready to change. That is one thing that struck, and another thing that struck me was, Swami says that in the 13 years they never had a joke like this. Which shows that when we spent so many afternoon satsangs before Rama, Lakshmana and Sita entered the forest, within just one afternoon satsang we have finished 13 years in the forest, because that is what has happened. When they have reached Panchavati, we had already described as to how Panchavati is near Nasik in Maharashtra, while Chitrakuta is somewhere in Uttar Pradesh. It is 400 to 500 kilometers apart. So there's absolutely not much emphasis laid on the journey that Rama passes through and kills so many demons in the process, which we are not aware of. And I don't think, as I said, even Valmiki lays emphasis on this. So that also becomes evident as we listen to this clip, that 13 years have passed, and Rama returns to Ayodhya after 14 years. So all the action that is about to take place happens within the next 1 year now.
And to think of it, that this was the very important task which Rama came to do. I think this is what is getting redefined in many of when we look at Ramayana again and again. I think even when we spoke about Swami, when we asked this question of why an avatar comes, I think invariably we give more importance to that, dushta
Shikshana.
Shikshana,
Dushta Sikshana, Shishta Rakshana.
Shishta Rakshana. Because actually we give more importance to the correction of the evil, but when we even see it chronologically, it all happens so quickly and so swiftly. And this episode is more or less marks that beginning of the end in a sense, because Shurpanakha now is very, very angered by this act. But the fact is, how can a woman stand there and allow such a thing to happen to her? Like, you know, even as Swami would very often say that even an ant which bites your leg, your whole body reacts to it. But here is here is a man catching her and chopping off her nose and ears. But she has stood there and let it happen to her, and that is revealed much later. But the first thing what she does is she runs to her brothers, as Swami said, Kara and Dushana.
Before we go to that part, Prem, I think a little more emphasis on the kind of connection that exists between the two brothers, that is between Rama and Lakshmana. It is so beautiful, and in the Ramkatha Rasamayani, Swami describes, of course, in the discourse, Swami seemed to have speeded through that. But in the Ramkatha Rasamayani, Swami so beautifully describes how Rama thinks that where a knife can work, you need not use a spear or you need not use a sickle. And therefore, there is minimal movement from Rama's side. Rama raises his hand and four fingers. The four fingers naturally on a raised palm point to the sky. Because you see, we had described the Parnashala episode where Rama tells Lakshmana, you build a hut. And Lakshmana is in tears saying that, Rama, what do you mean you build a hut where you want? Because I have no will of my own. I don't do anything which is not your will. Your wish, your desire is my command. So till you have a wish or a desire, I have no command. I don't do anything. And that is the reason that though Shurpanakha charged towards Sita, you know, this is another point here. Shurpanakha charges trying to kill Sita because she doesn't want the competition. And that itself shows that hypocrisy coming out. You can camouflage your evilness, your cruelty for some time as nobility and sweetness, but you can't do it forever, because unless you are genuinely good and loving within, you can't express love. So it'll naturally come out and your cruelty, anger and irritation gets expressed. That's what happened. If you read Valmiki Ramayana, it shows that at this point in time, she transforms back into the Rakshasi. She gives up her form as a beautiful damsel and becomes a Rakshasi. Again, it's metaphorical to show that that charade she was performing of being a courteous and sweet woman is gone, and her true character stands revealed as a cruel, greedy, unsatiated lady. So anyway, when this is happening, Lakshmana is supposed to be the bodyguard. He doesn't do anything. Because he's awaiting the command from Rama. And how does the command come? Rama points four fingers to the skies. And Lakshmana in an instant jumps with his sword and chops off the nose and ears of Shurpanakha. And Swami explains that when four fingers are raised, four stands, symbolizes the Vedas. The Vedas are also called Shrutis. Shruti also means that which is heard. And the ears are the organs through which you hear. So Lakshmana gets his first signal that you are supposed to do something to her ears. And ears hear sound, which is Shabda. And the element that is supposed to represent Shabda is Akasha. And Akasha is loosely translated as the skies, which is above. That is where Rama's fingers were pointing. Rama's fingers were pointing up towards the skies. That is where the heavens are. And heavens in Sanskrit are called Naka. Now this term Naka also means nose in Sanskrit. And therefore Lakshmana gets a signal that I have to chop the nose. And that is why in an instant Lakshmana springs up and chops off the ears and nose of Shurpanakha. It's simply amazing if you think of it, Prem, that just a small signal from Rama was enough to trigger Lakshmana. It reminded me of many instances where Swami would just indicate and the people concerned would know what has to be done. And that is the kind, in fact, I received a mail asking, how is it that people knew what Swami wanted? Is it that Swami has told them beforehand? Or what is it? What would happen? How would they have an understanding without Swami even communicating? And they asked out 2-3 examples of Swami making a turn over here, Swami going there. That is when, you know, I wrote back a mail telling that, you know, at this point in time, you see Swami would indicate with his finger and the different things that we have seen, and they were so amazed. They said, how would somebody observe this finger? You know, when Swami, after lady side darshan, when in the wheelchair, Swami suddenly decided not to go to the gent side. It, to any onlooker, it would appear as if the person pushing the wheelchair just decided that today I am not in a mood to go to the gent side. But they wouldn't realize that there was a very silent signaling process going on, which the people concerned would be aware. Now this takes signaling to entirely a new dimension, and that is why it is said that Swami used to often describe Lakshmana as the one with the sukshma buddhi. One with such subtle intelligence and such alertness that he would not only be able to read the little signs that Rama would make, he had in fact gone to the level of being able to read the thoughts in Rama's mind even as they arise.
This is actually a very important point when you look at it from the relationship between a devotee and the Lord. Hmm. Because many times when you talk of this concept of love itself, you know, in the first stage of when you say that a devotee loves the Lord, the first stage is when at every point you ask yourself, you know, what is it that the Lord wants? What is it that the Lord wants? But even in that, there is this interpretation of how I see what the Lord's need is. You know, many times when you would see that even in Swami's presence, when people would give Swami things which probably Swami did not need. You know, the other way also it happened. You know, one way Swami's indications were read, and on the other occasion, you know, Swami's indications were misread too.
Hmm.
The intention in both places were the same. You know, both places people are looking at Swami and seeing what Swami needs now. What would Swami want now? What Swami would ask for now? I think at some point that devotion becomes so pure that when the observer himself vanishes, when you're at a state of absolute readiness and purity to see and pick exactly what, you know, the Lord is indicating. I mean, imagine at the end of it, if Lakshmana had actually misread the symbol. You know, many times we would talk of it as a joke. Imagine at the end of it, Rama asks, oh, Lakshmana,
why did you do what you do?
What did you do that for? You know, I just showed my four fingers and that's not what I meant. But
I wanted you to chop off four of her fingers.
Right, something like that. But you know, that's the beauty, because Lakshmana was, I think, observing, removing himself completely. And that is why that episode Swami puts before this, where he says, no, why do you have to make me choose? I don't have a choice of my own. Because he is somebody who has removed his likes, dislikes, his choices, the way he wants. When he has removed that completely, I think this is something which is emphasized in different episodes and different characters. That's what happens with Bharata. You know, Bharata was all the time thinking that he was pushing his love forward by trying to make Rama, you know, come and accede the throne. I mean, a throne. But at that beautiful discussion between what is the dharma of a devotee, where you're supposed to do what the Lord wants. At every stage, this is kind of brought in different ways, where the devotee is able to completely give up his likes and dislikes. The same thing will repeat when Vibhishana comes into the picture. Same thing repeats when Sugriva and Hanuman comes into the picture. In different levels, in different situations, this is brought again. I think that is why, even though that Ramayana does not look as much a text about Bhagavatam as Bhagavatam is. You know, Bhagavatam, you always see that overflowing love and devotion. You have the Gopikas, you have the stories of the other, you know, Prahlada, Dhruva and all these people, where devotion is portrayed as it is. I think in Ramayana it's very, very subtle. It's very, very subtle because Rama is not accepted universally as the Lord. You know, because that is the secret of the whole game. Because Rama has to live his life as a normal human being. But still, the lessons of devotion are brought out in a very, very subtle and beautiful way within the relationships like brothers and husband and wife and all that. That's the beauty of this episode too, in that.
And another, you know, I was just happening to read in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
Okay.
It is mentioned that Shurpanaka later, you know, with his nose chopped and so many things again happen, you know, later on, we'll see towards the end, Shurpanaka is still alive actually. When Rama crowns Vibhishana as the emperor of Lanka, okay, she's still there. And after that, she goes to the sacred lake, a Pushkara in present day Rajasthan, and she prays to Brahma because she has still not forgotten Rama. She's so much so, she just feels that, she prays to Lord Brahma, the creator, that, you know, I want to be worthy of the Lord's love. Now she realizes, and you know, this, you can see this change of heart. And therefore, when this is done, it is said that in her next birth, she is born as Kubja. Kubja, the hunchback that we spoke about, you know, sometime back.
Right.
She is reborn. It is said that Kubja is nothing but Shurpanaka reborn. And what she did not get in the previous birth, that is Rama appreciating her beauty, she gets because Krishna calls her beautiful. So much so that, you see, in the first case, when she goes to the Lord, she's arrogant. She tells to Rama that, you know, she's almost like, I'm the most beautiful woman here, and what is this, leaving me or going behind Sita? And, you know, Rama apparently shows what he thinks of her beauty because he gets her ears and nose chopped. In the second case, you know, she's saying that I'm a most ugly person. And Krishna comes and tells you're a very beautiful person. You know, her desire to get that appreciation from the Lord that she's beautiful, to get an acknowledgement of her beauty, that desire is fulfilled. Again, you know, when we, this is of course not there in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, but when we see this, we realize why it is so important that we have to think what we seek, think about what we desire, because none of these, as we had spoken in one other satsang, all these desires are like pebbles thrown in the Manas Sarovar, thrown in a very placid lake. They create ripples, ripples that traverse across the length and breadth of the lake. So too, all these desires have their after effects and reactions, possibly not in this birth, but in future births also. Therefore, we should be very careful as to what we desire. That's why Swami in one discourse says, Aduguku eyo manasa. Oh mind, don't ask at all, just shut up. Don't ask at all, because whatever you need, the Lord knows, the Lord will provide to you unasked. Better don't ask and ask for something stupid. So it was lucky here that Shurpanaka sought the Lord, because she got the Lord in her next birth. But, you know, you can never say. You can never say, because the mind, the senses, they are like horses without reins. They will drag you in any direction. We may end up desiring for things that we may later repent for. That is why it is very important to see what we desire, and we should desire only God, because God has no negatives. And whatever we do, we should desire God. In fact, that is how Swami says we should evaluate our life. Any desire that takes us towards God is good. Any desire that takes us away from God is bad. And therefore, we should make an effort to only cultivate good desires.
And the contrast between these two characters are really beautiful, actually. You know, Shurpanaka and Kubja. Because in Shurpanaka's case, as you said, you know, she tries to pretend as though she is beautiful. Not only her internal ugliness is revealed, but it is even further made ugly by, you know, her nose, you know, physically her nose and ears being cut. But in the case of Kubja, she is actually, as you said, a hunchback whose, the scene is very beautiful. She is actually one of those maids of Kamsa's palace who goes around the garden collecting fragrant flowers and she makes scents out of it for the Lord, for her master. And that's when Balrama and Krishna actually come into that garden. They see this lady, hunchback lady, who's picking flowers. And Krishna goes and asks her, "Oh Sundari, what is your name?" And she gets very offended.
Sundari meaning beautiful one.
The one who is very beautiful. And she gets very offended. She looks at Krishna and the same reaction. She looks at Krishna and she says, "I've never seen anything as so charming, captivating and charming as this. I've never seen a person so beautiful." And when Krishna says that, "Oh Sundari," she gets offended. She says, "Just because you are good looking, why are you mocking at me?" And then Krishna says, "No, I am referring to what I am seeing. I am seeing the beauty within, and that's why I am calling you Sundari." And the beautiful episode that follows is he catches hold of her chin and he straightens her back. Like, you know, how you would catch the chin of a little child. Krishna catches her and lifts her and straightens her body and transforms her into a beautiful woman.
Physically beautiful.
Physically beautiful woman. And it's so beautiful, you know, when you have evil inside you, when you have ugliness inside and you pretend to be beautiful, what is inside is brought out. And here, when there is true beauty inside, and when there is humility, which, you know, in a sense what was portrayed, the Lord comes and brings out the beauty from within and makes it manifest and appear outside.
Absolutely. In one case, if we see it in the physical sense, the Lord disfigures the one who is ugly within. And here, the Lord beautifies the one who is beautiful within. And again, it highlights the same truth, which is, in the Lord's eyes, beauty is not about how you look, how much money you have, how much power you possess. Beauty is all about character. That is the only thing that the Lord looks out for. Continuing with the story, Shurpanaka is very upset And you know, in the discourse clip, Swami mentions about several of her brothers. Two of her brothers who are closest at that point in time are Kara and Dushana. And they are also Rakshasas. And they have a horde of 14,000 men at their command. And she goes wailing to them and she tells them, what kind of brothers are you? Are you men? How can you tolerate such gross injustice being done to your sister? And you know, she starts wailing and she starts to incense them. And they are just angered now. They don't, see, this is one thing that happened. It is said that don't take a decision in anger because it'll invariably be a wrong decision. See, now here, because they are angered at whoever has done this, they are not ready to listen or they are not ready to investigate into what has actually happened, who is at fault. They just tell Shurpanakha that you just name who that person is. Whoever has done this to you will become extinct. We are going to exterminate that person or those people, whoever it is. And she is very happy. This is exactly the reaction that she was looking out for. And so she describes, she says that these princes, they have come, they are very, you know, they look so magnificent, but as magnificent as they look, I think that much cruel they are because this is what they have done to me. And I know their hut is somewhere in this region, it is over here, she points out. And all the 14,000 men, demons, Rakshasas, they are so angry, they are upset, and they start charging towards this hut with drum roll and beat and everything. That is when, you know, Rama tells, now again, this highlights what we had said before about Lakshmana being a bodyguard to Rama. Because Rama doesn't tell Lakshmana, take care of them, protect us. He tells Lakshmana, take Sita and go to a cave. Just listen to me. I will deal with all these demons.
Right. And then, you know, the battle starts where single-handedly Rama is able to hold out all these people. And before that, you know, Kara and Dushana come and I think when first Shurpanakha goes and tells Kara and Dushana, she starts praising the beauty of Rama and Lakshmana. And they get impatient with her, you know, because every time she starts talking about the beauty of Rama and Lakshmana, Shurpanakha is getting lost. I mean, here is one who is in pain because her, you know, nose and ears have been chopped off, but she's getting lost in their beauty when she starts describing. And then when she brings them, again, they look at Rama and they are like for a moment stunned. They're not able to take this. And
that is why actually Kara and Dushana, though they have come with all the intention, bloodthirsty they are, after seeing Rama standing alone there, they are so enamored that they send a messenger actually.
Right. They send a messenger and to him, Rama says actually, you know, that I am the prince of Ayodhya who has come here and I have come here to hunt down animals such as your master. So go and tell him if he's ready, let him come. But I have a vow that whoever runs away from the battlefield, I will not harm them. So if any of you have any desire for your life, you can run, you can flee now. But otherwise, be prepared to meet your maker. You know, that's the message which Rama sends back to the messenger.
And that is enough to ignite Kara and Dushana and they charge madly. And that is where the magnificence and might of Lord Rama is seen as he single-handedly trounces all these 14,000 ogres and demons. And one interesting thing over here, you know, he makes use, it is described even in the Valmiki Ramayana, that Rama uses a weapon called the Sammohanastra. And Sammohanastra is supposed to be a weapon that befuddles, confuses the people. And you know, when he releases this weapon, each ogre, each demon begins to see the other as the enemy. So demon 1 looks at demon 2 and sees demon 2 as Rama. Looks at demon 3 as Rama. So demon 1 starts attacking demon 2 and demon 3. Now demon 2 and demon 3 in the meanwhile look at demon 1 and they see Rama. So just imagine, each one is seeing the other as Rama. And they start killing each other. And they end up dead. And they, in that sense actually Rama did not do anything. They were the cause for their own destruction. All these statements are very metaphorical, right, Prem? Because it shows that we are the cause for our own emancipation. We are the cause for our own destruction. Just look at another scene in the Bhagavatam where the Gopikas, they start seeing Krishna wherever they see. That led to a ras, the rasa leela. So beautiful that was. And over here, the same blessing is being conferred on these demons. They are able to see the Lord wherever they look. But what did it result in? They killed each other and died. So you see, it again shows that the Lord's love is equal on all. It is how we utilize the love that matters. While the Gopikas utilize that to get the ultimate experience, the demons utilize that experience to kill themselves. And they died. See, this is what happens. When I was reading the Ramkatha Rasavahini and reached this point, I was really wonderstruck. And I felt, Swami, how much is your love, Swami? Even on Rakshasas you shower your love. Swami, see, in many of his discourses, Swami even condemns. He says, people who do these kind of things, people who do this, they are worse than Rakshasas. Swami states it so vehemently. And yet, on the same people, Swami showers love also. And that I got to see when I was reading this part, because here are Rakshasas who are attacking Rama, and on them also Rama showers this beautiful experience where he makes them see Rama, Rama everywhere. There's that bhajan, Rama here, Rama there, Rama, Rama everywhere. What we sing as bhajan is an experience that these demons get. But because they are demons, because it's a reflection of their own inner being, it results in them annihilating themselves. And in this manner, it's a very, very vicious, ferocious battle and war, because of which so many wild animals get scared. And Swami writes how these animals rush to the same cave where Lakshmana and Sita are sheltering. And with the love of a brother and love of a mother, Lakshmana and Sita tend to these animals and keep them comfortable in the cave till this battle is over, after which Lakshmana and Sita return to Lord Rama.
Even as you're saying about the way you look at the Lord and the difference between the Gopikas and the demons here, you know, it seems, once when Swami was talking to these group of youngsters who form the Hyderabad youth, Swami had once told them, you know, it happens with most of us. I think even as students it happened with us. Swami would say, I'll come to the hostel tomorrow, and the tomorrow will not come the tomorrow, right? You know? Or Swami would say, I'll speak to you this evening, and it wouldn't happen. And for some reason, which Swami alone knows, it would happen, and we all will get disappointed. Sometimes we would, you know, say that Swami always keeps saying things like this, he never does what he says, and things like that. So apparently something like that had happened. Swami had told this group that he will speak to them on one particular day. It did not happen. A couple of days later, Swami called them, and needless to say that those 2 days in between, they would have spoken loose words about Swami in the, you know, wherever they were staying. But they were very happy that Swami had called them for an interview. And in the interview, Swami told them, you know, very, very seriously, Swami said, I want a word from all of you. Try your best not to, you know, have any negative thoughts towards Swami. Try your best not to speak angrily against Swami. Swami said, it's not that it is going to affect me, it is going to harm you. So I'm pleading with you, don't ever do that. Mm. You know, it's really this, because, you know, something like this, someone asked, Astra, it's almost like whatever you wish for will come to you. You know, I'm a wish fulfilling tree. If you come to me asking for the right things, you will get it eventually. But if you ask for the wrong things, I cannot help it, but it will come to you because you've asked for it. It's almost like that, and that's really a beautiful thing. And as the story goes, after these demons are vanquished, Shurpanakha runs away. She is not killed. And I think it's for a good reason. She runs away. But then Lakshmana and Sita come, and Rama very graphically, even, you know, Swami himself says that with so much delight, Rama relates the entire battle as it occurred to Lakshmana.
And as he, you know, as he narrates the details of the battle, one thought that arose in me, Prem, was this. You know, forget all these battle, Rakshasa and all that. As you even hinted about this in the beginning, as to, didn't Sita feel empathy towards Shurpanakha? Because all said and done, Shurpanakha is also a woman. And yeah, she's a Rakshasi in the sense of her feelings within. But as we know, physically she looks as womanly as any other woman. And Sita being the mother, an epitome of compassion, I'm sure that she would have felt some kind of compassion even for the Rakshasas, you know, when she could feel sympathy for the animals that get hit. She would definitely have, don't you think that her heart would have melted seeing 14,000 corpses lying around the Panchavati ashram? I'm sure she must have felt that compassion, motherly compassion, and even if she didn't feel it for the Rakshasas, she would have felt some kind of empathy at least towards Shurpanakha, right?
Definitely. I don't know whether it was, in this context, but as we said, 13 years have passed, and in these 13 years, actually, Rava has gone about vanquishing a lot of demons who have been troubling the sages in those areas and all that. And it's been from one forest to the other, like, you know, Dandakaranya, and before that, wherever we've heard the other episodes also.
Actually, this Dandakaranya is so huge, so they have moved from different parts of Dandakaranya. They have moved from the eastern end of Dandakaranya to the western end.
Right. And that is when Swami actually mentioned this in that same Samukos series, but this was, I think, the day before, 23rd of May, when Swami says that Sita has this doubt and she goes and puts it forth in front of Rama, saying that, you know, is this acceptable?
What killing?
You killing all these beings, is it acceptable? You know, I mean, you could say that they are evil, they are bad, but who are we to punish them? You know, in a sense, but the way she puts it is very beautiful. And in this clip, so many important lessons Swami drives. I think it would be very useful to go through that. We'll listen to what the way Swami described that scene.
అక్కడ పంచవటిలో ఇద్దరు ముగ్గురు కూడాను చక్కని పర్ణశాలను వేసుకుని అందులో కాలం గడుపుతూ ఉన్నారు.
All the three reached Panchavati, built a beautiful hut and spent time there.
సీత చాలా బాధపడుతూ వచ్చింది.
Sita was feeling very sad.
ఒకనాడు పర్ణశాలలో కందమూలాదులు కనుకుంటుంటాయి లక్ష్మణుడు వెళ్ళగా సీత రామును సమీపించి, నాథ, కోరికలు కలగలేనటువంటి వారికి మూడు దుర్గుణములు ఉంటుంటాయి.
When Lakshmana went there to collect all the tubers and the leaves, Sita pleaded with Rama, tell, there are three bad qualities.
Modatidi asatyamayatam.
One, uttering lies.
Rendavati parapatinich, that is gamaninchatam.
Observing the wife of someone else.
Moodavati ee vidhamainati yokka dinto himsanu jalapatam.
Resorting to violence.
ఈ దుర్గుణములు ఉన్నటువంటి వాడికి ఈ మూడు కూడా పరమ ప్రాపర్టీస్ గా ఉంటుంటాయి వాళ్లకు.
ఫర్ ఎ బ్యాడ్ పర్సన్ దీస్ ఆర్ త్రీ బ్యాడ్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఆర్ ద ప్రాపర్టీ.
అనగా ఇది యవ్వనంలో ప్రాప్తించేటువంటి యొక్క దుర్గుణములు.
దీస్ ఆర్ ద బ్యాడ్ క్వాలిటీస్ దట్ స్టెప్ ఇన్ ది ఏజ్ ఆఫ్ యూత్.
ఈ వయసు లోపల ఈ దుర్గుణములు ప్రవేశించినా ఇంకా మానవత్వం అనేటువంటిది ఉండదు.
వెన్ వన్స్ దీస్ త్రీ క్వాలిటీస్ ఆర్ దేర్ దేర్ విల్ బి నో హ్యూమన్ క్వాలిటీ.
అయితే మీ యందు రెండు క్వాలిటీస్ మాత్రం చాలా దృఢంగా నేను నమ్ముతున్నాను.
You have very good qualities too in you.
Modatidi asatyamu meeru chepparu.
Falsehood, you will never utter a lie.
Inta puramu meeru asatyam aadaledu.
Never before.
Ippudu aadatam ledu.
Not now.
Munduku kuda meeru asatyam chepparu.
Nor in future.
Kanuka meeru satya swaroopulu.
You are the form of truth.
Nenu deenni nenu paripurnanga viswasinchanu.
I have full faith in that.
Aneteppatiki Ramulu cheppadu.
And Rama said.
Pattulu cheta patini సద్గుణములు కలవాడనేటువంటిదిగా వర్ణించటమే నిజమైన పతికి సరి అయినటువంటి గుణము అన్నారు.
టు గెయిన్ రికగ్నిషన్ ఫ్రమ్ వైఫ్ ఇస్ అ గుడ్ టెస్టిమోనియల్ ఫర్
పతి మంచివాడు అనేటువంటిది సతే అంగీకరించాలి, కానీ మరొక అంగీకరించడానికి వీలు కాదు.
ఇస్ ద వైఫ్ హూ షుడ్ సర్టిఫై దట్ ద హస్బెండ్ ఇస్ గుడ్.
అప్పుడే పతి అనేటువంటి పదమునకు సరైన విలువ ఉంటుంటాడు.
దెన్ ద హస్బెండ్ విల్ హ్యావ్ వాల్యూ.
కనుక సీత, నీవు నేను సత్యవంతుడని నీవు అంగీకరించావు, అదే నా సంతోషం అన్నాడు.
So Rama said, Sita, you accepted that I speak truth. I am happy about
ఇంకా రెండవది.
Second.
పరపత్ని గమనం అనేటువంటిది మీలో లేదు.
You don't have that bad quality of staring at wives of others.
ఇతర స్త్రీలను చూడటమే ఒక పెద్ద చెడ్డ క్వాలిటీ.
It's a bad quality to stare at women.
ఎప్పుడూ చూడలేదు.
You never looked at them.
ఇం సీత మమ పతి మన పత్ని అనగా జనకుడు చెప్పాడు. ఇం సీత.
Janaka said, she is my daughter, Sita.
ఎక్కడో చూస్తున్నావు రామ, సీత ఇక్కడ ఉంటుందాది.
రామా యువర్
పుత్రి ఇఎం సీత అన్నాడు.
యు ఆర్ లుకింగ్ ఇన్ ఎ డిఫరెంట్ డైరెక్షన్ రామా, హియర్ ఇస్ మై సీత డాటర్.
చూడలేదు.
ఈవెన్ దెన్ యూ డిడ్ లుక్ అట్ హర్.
కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ద రీజన్?
వివాహమయ్యేంత వరకు కూడాను ఒక స్త్రీని చూడకూడదు అనేటువంటిది పెద్ద ప్రామిస్.
యూ హ్యావ్ టేకెన్ ఎ ప్రామిస్.
పెద్ద గుణము.
It's a very good, great quality.
ఇలాంటి గొప్ప గుణం అనేటువంటిది మీలో ఉంటుందాది, అది నేను గమనించాను.
You have got this great quality, not look at any woman until
you are married. Dharmamu.
That is dharma.
కనుకని సత్యం వద ధర్మం చెర అనేటువంటిది మీ యందు ఈ రెండు కూడా ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రమాణంలో నింది.
There's direct evidence with regard to these two principles that you tell to follow dharma.
హింస.
Third, violence.
దీనిని నేను అంగీకరించనండి.
This I don't accept.
మీరు తాపస వేషమును ధరించి అరణ్యములో సంచరిస్తూ ఈ యొక్క ఆయుధములు చేపట్టి నీ యొక్క ఏమాత్రం కూడా నీకు అపకారం చేయనటువంటి యొక్క జంతువుని హింసించడము ఇది సరైనటువంటి ధర్మం కాదనింది.
యు ఆర్ వేరింగ్ ది అటైర్ ఆఫ్ ఎ రెనన్షియంట్ స్పెండింగ్ ద టైమ్ ఇన్ ద ఫారెస్ట్ యు క్యారీ ఆల్ ద వెపన్స్ బట్ యు కిల్ అనిమల్స్.
అయోధ్యలో జీవించేటప్పుడు నీ ఆయుధాలు నీకు అవసరం. కానీ అరణ్యములో తాప సన్నివేశంతో నీవు సంచరించే సమయంలో ఆయుధాలు ఉపయోగించకూడదు.
ఇన్ ది అటైర్ ఆఫ్ రెనన్షియంట్ యు షుడ్ నెవర్ మేక్ యూజ్ ఆఫ్ వెపన్స్.
ఈ ఆయుధములు ఉపయోగించడమే కాకుండా
నాట్ ఓన్లీ మేకింగ్ యూజ్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్,
ఈ మృగములు నీకేం అపకారం చేస్తున్నాయి?
వాట్ హార్మ్ ద అనిమల్స్?
ఈ రాక్షసులు నీకేం అపకారం చేయటం లేదు కదా.
దే ఆర్ నాట్ డూయింగ్ ఎనీ హార్మ్.
నీ జోలికి రావటం లేదు కదా.
దే డోంట్.
అలాంటి పరిస్థితిలో నీవు నిష్కారణంగా దీనిని హింసించడము ఎంత తప్పు.
It is a big mistake to harm them.
ఏనాడు కూడా సీత నోరెత్తి ఈ విధంగా పలికినటువంటిది కాదు.
సీత నెవర్ సెడ్ లైక్ దట్ ఎట్ ఎనీ టైమ్ బిఫోర్.
కానీ పురుష సింహమునకు ఉండవలసినటువంటి లక్షణములు నీలో రెండు మాత్రమే ఉన్నది, మూడవది లేదు.
దేర్ ద లయన్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ షుడ్ హ్యావ్ టూ క్వాలిటీస్ యూ హ్యావ్ బట్ ద థర్డ్ క్వాలిటీ ఇస్ మిస్సింగ్.
ఆదర్శ పురుషుడు నీవు.
యువర్ అన్ ఐడియల్ మ్యాన్.
అలాంటి వాని దగ్గర హింస అనేటువంటి పదము ఉండకూడదు.
యూ షుడ్ నాట్ రిసార్ట్ టు వైలెన్స్.
అప్పుడు మెల్లగా రాములు నవ్వుతూ, సీత నీవు చెప్పినది నిజమే.
రామ స్మైలింగ్లీ సెడ్ సీత వాట్ యు సెడ్.
కానీ మునులకు తాపసులకు ఋషులకు అనేక రకములైనటువంటి కష్టములు కలిగిస్తున్నారు రాక్షసులు.
డెమన్స్ హావ్ బీన్ పుటింగ్ టు సఫరింగ్ ఆల్ ద సేజెస్ అండ్
సెయింట్స్. నాలోని ఏమి సహాయం కావాలని నేను అడగక పూర్వమే వారే వచ్చి నా సహాయాన్ని కోరుతున్నారు.
ఐ నెవర్ ఆస్క్డ్. దే దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ ప్లీటెడ్ విత్ మీ ఫర్ మై హెల్ప్.
హే రామ, మా కష్టములను దూరం చేయి, ఈ రాక్షసును సంహరించు, మా తపస్సులకు భంగం కావించుండా చూసుకో.
దే ఆల్ ప్రేడ్ టు మీ వాంటింగ్ మై హెల్ప్ సో దట్ దే కెన్ క్యారీ ఆన్ విత్ దేర్ యాగ.
కనుక వారికి నేను వాగ్దానం ఇచ్చాను.
ఐ మేడ్ ఎ ప్రామిస్ టు దెమ్.
సీతనైనా వదులుతాను,
ఐఎమ్ రెడీ టు గివ్.
లక్ష్మణ్నైనా వదులుతాను, కానీ నా ప్రామిస్ నేను వదలను.
ఐఎమ్ రెడీ టు గివ్ అప్ సీత, ఐఎమ్ రెడీ టు గివ్ అప్ లక్ష్మణ, బట్ ఐ
నెవర్ పాపమో పుణ్యమో.
యజ్ఞ
యాగాది కట్టువులు చాలా పవిత్రమైనటువంటివి.
యజ్ఞ యాగ సర్ సేక్రెడ్.
వాటిని సంరక్షించడము, వాటిని ఆచరించేటువంటి ఋషులను నేను పోషించడము ఇది నా కర్తవ్యం.
ఇట్స్ మై రెస్పాన్సిబిలిటీ టు టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ద సేజ్ అండ్ సెయింట్స్ అండ్ టు ప్రొటెక్ట్ ది యజ్ఞాస్ అండ్ యాగాస్.
కనుక నేను వారికి వాగ్దానం చేశాను.
సో ఐ మేడ్ ఎ ప్రామిస్.
చెప్పిన మాటను తప్పను.
ఐ నెవర్ గో బ్యాక్ ద ప్రామిస్ గివెన్.
సీత నీవు దీన్ని మర్చిపో.
సీత యు ఫర్గెట్ దిస్.
హింస చేయక తప్పదు.
వైలెన్స్ ఇస్ ఎ మస్ట్.
నా నిమిత్తమై కాదు.
నాట్ ఫర్ మై సేక్.
కేవలము ఈ తపస్సులు చేసేటువంటి తపస్సుల యొక్క శ్రేయస్సును కోరి.
ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ ద వెల్ఫేర్ ఆఫ్ ద సేజెస్ హూ హావ్ అండర్టేకెన్ పెనెన్స్.
ఇంతే కాక యజ్ఞ యాగాది కతువుల వల్ల దేశములకు ఎంతో శ్రేయస్సు కలుగుతుండాలి.
నాట్ ఓన్లీ దిస్ యజ్ఞ యాగాస్ విల్ ఎన్షోర్ వెల్ఫేర్ ఆఫ్ ద వరల్డ్.
శ్రేయస్సు నిమిత్తమై నేను ఈ హింసను చేయక తప్పదు అన్నాడు.
ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ ద వెల్ఫేర్ అండ్ ద ప్రోగ్రెస్ ఆఫ్ ద వరల్డ్ ఐ మస్ట్ డూ దిస్ వైలెన్స్.
తిరిగి సీత పాదములంటే క్షమించమని ప్రార్థించింది.
సీత కాట్ హోల్డ్ ఆఫ్ హిస్.
నాకు తోచింది నేను చెప్పినాను.
ఐ జస్ట్ ఎక్స్ప్రెస్.
భర్త దుర్మార్గుడై కీడు వడయు వేళ మంత్రి ఎట్టుల మేల్కీళ్లు మనవి చేసి పతికి హితమును గరపుగా పడతులెప్పుడు అరయవలయు మండోదరి ఎట్లు భువిని. పతికి అనేక రకమైనటువంటి హితములంతా బోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది మండోదరి.
మండోదరి వెంట ఆన్ గివింగ్ గుడ్ టీచింగ్.
ఆమె హితములను తాను మనసారా తీసుకోవటం చేతనే సీతను ఏ విధంగా కూడా హింసించలేకపోయాడు.
Because he accepted what all Sita said good, he didn't put her any
కనుక సాత్వీమణులైనటువంటి స్త్రీలు అనేక విధములుగా పతులకు బోధించవలసినటువంటి ఒక రైట్ కూడా వారికి.
సో ఆల్ చేస్ట్ విమెన్ హావ్ గాట్ దిస్ రెస్పాన్సిబిలిటీ.
వారు దారి తప్పిపోయినప్పుడంతా కూడా సరైన మార్గంలో ప్రవేశించడానికి స్త్రీలు కూడా వారికి అధికారం ఉంటుండాలి.
విమెన్ హావ్ గాట్ రైట్ టు కరెక్ట్ దేర్ హస్బెండ్స్ వెన్ దే ఆర్ ఆల్ ఇన్ ద రాంగ్ పాత్.
వారు అర్ధాంగి.
బికాజ్ దే ఆర్ హాఫ్ బాడీ.
అంతేకాదు,
నాట్ ఓన్లీ దిస్,
వారి యొక్క జీవితం లోపల ఇల్లాలు దీనికి తగినటువంటి బాధ్యతంతా వహించినటువంటిది.
ఉమెన్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ ఇల్లాలు, ద క్యారీస్ ద బర్డెన్ ఆఫ్ ది హౌస్.
There was a clip which, you know, where Sita expresses her apprehension about Rama going about vanquishing some of these Rakshasas and, you know, what authority he had. And very beautifully Swami says that, you know, there are three ways in which evil enters a person. That one is through the form of untruth, through the form of lust, having desire for another man's wife, and the third one is violence. And Swami also emphasizes that all these three qualities actually step in the time of youth. And clearly that is the age where Rama and Lakshmana are, and Sita says that, you know, the first two you definitely don't indulge in, but the third one, violence, you seem to be, you know, doing that day in and day out. You seem to be killing. So when Rama says that I've taken the role of the protector of all these people who are doing yajnas and yagas, and so it is not possible for me to refrain from violence, and this violence is justified because I am doing it for protecting the good people from evil. That is one thing, but the other important point that Swami mentions is how it was justifiable that Sita came up and asked Rama these questions. Swami says it is the duty of a woman to go and question her husband when even she feels that what he is doing is wrong. And Swami goes on to say that this is what even Mandodari did. And to a great extent, Ravana did not, you know, take the courage to do anything wrong against Sita because of the questioning that Mandodari subjected him to.
And one more point that Swami makes there is that for Loka Samastha, for the welfare of the whole world, this is something that I have to take up. This is what Rama tells Sita. And we see this happening many times in the Ramayana, where for the sake of a larger good, Rama seems to sacrifice the individual good. And even when it came to his own self, he was no exception to that. We often see people, you know, doing this, saying that it's for world good, where it involves harm or disadvantage to a small group of people. But if it happens to have them in that small group of people getting disadvantaged, they may not have the courage to take the step. That is where Rama differs from all the others, who then surely stand out as hypocrites because they have different rule when it comes to themselves, a different rule when it comes to others. There was this little experiment, I think we narrated it in some other satsang, in some context maybe, or maybe we have not narrated it, about a kind of psychological experiment that was done. You know, it is said that there is a track, railway track, have we said this, which diverges into two?
Okay.
Then I think we have not said it because you seem to be... So a railway track that diverges into two, there are four people working on the railway track on one side. That is the track on which the train is going to go. They're not working on the track, they're there, four people on the track. And those four people are going to die if the train goes there. Now, on the other track, there's only one person. So now you are at that point holding the lever, where if you change the lever, the train will take the track on which there's only one person. So thus you'll be able to save four people, and this one person will die. What do you do? What do you do? I mean, it appears as if it is for the betterment of a larger good, so you turn the train to the track where there's one person dying. And in the experiment also, this is what happened, where almost everybody, 100% of the respondents said that they would direct it on to the track where there's only one person. A few people just said that we don't know, we are confused. But there was not a single person who just said that, you know, I will just leave the train to go on the track and let the four people die. Now they tweaked this experiment. They said, what if that one person working on the track was your father, was your brother, was your uncle or your somebody, your aunt, something? This changes the whole thing now suddenly. People say that, oh, if it's my father, you know, I would love to save my father. Come on, you know, you don't tell me that I'm going to kill my own father. It changes the whole thing. It's not as if everybody changed over to killing the killing four people to save one, but a large number of people were now in doubt, in confusion, or they were ready to kill four for the sake of one. What changed? See, the minute your personal agenda comes in, it changes your decision making. That did not happen with Rama. In fact, actually, now that I have mentioned, and since our time for the satsang is anyway getting over, I will just tell a little more the next step of the same experiment. It was said, a different variation was given, you know, because this just shows how we change our morality. In this version of the experiment, what happens is, now one version was where they said that that single person is your father or uncle. Now in the second version they say, there are no two tracks. There is only one track. And there are four people there. You are standing on a bridge and in front of you is one very hefty person. if you push that person down onto the track below, the train is going to hit him and kill him off. But because of that impact, it's going to slow down and then it will stop, so those four people can be saved. Will you push that person? Now, nobody was ready to do that. They said, how can you expect me to push a person onto the track? Can you believe this, Prem? People are ready to divert the train onto a track and kill one person. But instead of pulling a lever, you have to push a person. The end result is the same. One person is dying to save four people. But somehow, people are ready to pull the lever, but people are not ready to push a person. Because somehow pushing a person makes your hands dirty. Makes you feel more guilty. I don't know what it is. But this is very interesting. And it has got many ramifications and many that it goes into great detail. But it just shows how when we get personally involved, we change morality, we change rules to suit us. But when we are not involved, it is different. And I brought up this just to point out that when it comes to Rama's case, it is not like that. Irrespective of what it has been, he even, for the sake of Loka Kalyanam, he subjected himself to trouble. Why else would he banish himself into the forest? When everybody, then, you know, we have seen how it is. They said, you come back. Later on, we will see that he banishes Sita to the forest. So it was not as if he made one rule for others, one rule for himself. That is why it is said, Ramaha Vigravahan Dharmaha. We should not, you know, some people get into the thing of criticizing, saying, how could Rama send away his wife? Rama is bad. I think at that point in time, at least those of us who have had the privilege and pleasure of knowing Swami, let us remember what Swami said. Don't criticize Swami. It holds good same for Rama and Krishna. Let us not criticize Rama or Krishna because they are avatars. If we are criticizing them, it's only because of our own ignorance and our own mean understanding or lack of understanding. It's not a fault in what they did. And so, you know, there also when Swami says that it is good that a wife should ask, she's a dharma patni, maybe we too with that same kind of humility, see what you pointed out, I loved it. You said the way Sita asks is so nice. Sita didn't come and say, hey Rama, what are you doing? You're killing people. She said that you are, you know, you do this, you do this. That shows that she genuinely admires her husband and this is a confusion, a doubt that is there. It is with that attitude we can question the Lord. It's a genuine doubt. It should not be an attitude of arrogance. It should not be an attitude of, I know better than you or I am greater than you.
Or I am finding fault in you.
Exactly.
Right. And that's really is the beautiful point. And I think we've literally come back to the same point we started with, because it again comes back to looking at these characters of, you know, be it Rama, Krishna or dear Swami, with the faith, accepting wholeheartedly that there must be something, you know, something more subtler and something more perfectly good about what they did. Maybe it is not, you know, it's not reachable with my reason, because even those conditions which you gave, those people who are selfish, I think making the decision is very simple for them, right? You know, if you say that it's my father over there, I think it's very, the choice is very direct for them. Definitely it's going to be their father. Somebody who's very, very dharmic, who has never strayed from the path of righteousness, I think even for them, the decision will be very, very straightforward. We may or may not be able to understand that decision. We may question that decision. But as Swami would say, that if you always stick to the path of dharma, you will not have a dilemma. You will, with that practice of dharma, come straight to the decision without any confusion. When we look at it, we may question it. I think always the problem is for those people in the middle who are sometimes good, sometimes bad, who are, you know, the dwindling between this and that. And the confusion is always there. I think similarly, if we fix this thing that whatever Rama did, whatever Krishna did, whatever Swami did was the ultimately right thing to do, I think we can at least try to figure out what way it was right and draw the lesson and apply it in our life. I think that's the best way we can approach the entire Ramayana itself.
Exactly, Prem. Once the ogres, 14,000 of them, have been vanquished by Rama, the sages come to Rama, the saints come, because this becomes a holy spot. See, that is one more beautiful thing. When it is done by the Lord, even a scene of massacre becomes a holy spot. So many sages and saints and sadhakas visit. They also actually warn Rama, telling Rama, be careful, because you know Shurpanaka is the sister of Ravana, and Ravana is very, very brutal and cruel, and we have no idea the extent to which he may be ready to go. And Rama acknowledges their warning and he comforts them saying, yes, I will be on my guard. And this is exactly what happens. Shurpanakha goes to Ravana. I think the complaints and the way she ignites Ravana and what happens next, we shall take up in our afternoon satsang next week. So dear listeners, we offer our humble salutations once again to our dear Swami, who is the inspiration, the guide, the whole and soul motive and everything for us, and to Lord Hanuman, who is always present wherever the glory of his Rama is sung. We bring this discussion on the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini to a close. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did. We would love to listen, hear from you. You can write to us as always at listener@radiosai.org. And we shall take up this discussion again next week. Till then, enjoy this wonderful song, on the other side of which you will be greeted as always by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love.
And even as we part, dear listeners, we would like to again remind you that this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we are having special live broadcast by the Telugu team to celebrate their 4th anniversary. On Saturday, it's going to be entirely a children's day. We're going to have programs by children from the various high schools from around India, and of course the primary school and the Ishwarama school in Prashanthi Nilayam. On Sunday, it will be programmed by devotees and members of the volunteers from the different Radio Sai studios in Tirupati, Hyderabad and Vishakhapatnam. Do tune in. That's on Saturday and Sunday this weekend, the 4th anniversary celebrations of Telugu Stream. Till we meet you next week on Afternoon Satsang, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. Jai Sai Ram.